big weekend for the Huskers ends in a big defeat as Ohio State dismantles Nebraska 48-7. A lot of questions to look at. We're back at Ohio State, ahead to Northwestern, with our special guest, Mike Babcock from Hale Varsity. Plus, it was a busy recruiting weekend. Sean Callahan will have an update. It's all coming up on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. Live edition of NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. We are live in York at the Holtis Convention Center. It was a battle of two 900-win teams, and the team that arrived there first, Ohio State, really took apart Nebraska. We're going to break that game down for you. Of course, look ahead. Former Husker Jay Moore, Sean Callahan. What do you do after a game like that, especially with that whole day that was game day and the announcement of the facilities and all of that, and then it ends that way?
Yeah, I mean, there was, the hype was... it was phenomenal going to that game, and that was the one thing everyone was kind of afraid of, was, you know, all the attention with game day, the facilities, you know, the Friday night festivities with the basketball team and everything going on. You know, it's like, what if they lay an egg? Well, there was a possibility to happen. You just got to move on. You know, going into this game, I thought Nebraska could compete. They had to play not almost perfect, but they had to play pretty well. And they just didn't do it. And they didn't get any breaks. Ohio State played a perfect football game. And you just got to move on. Learn from your mistakes. Get better. And just focus your attention on Northwestern now. That's all you can really do at this time of year. Ohio State's one of the best teams in the nation. And you just got to move on.
Sean, you know, we talked before about 2007 USC game day, but they kind of fell apart after that. This isn't the same kind of team, right?
No, I mean, you go back to 07. I mean, that even though Nebraska was a 17-point dog in 07 in that game, just like this game as well, by the way, that almost felt like an all-in moment in 07 for Bill Callahan. Like, everything he had worked for at that time, like, this was the game. It was going to turn the program, and not only did it fail, I mean, they got blown out on the stage. What was funny, they lost both those USC games by 18 points, 28-10, and whatever the score was of the other one, the higher scoring one. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, the second one just felt obviously so much worse, the way they dismantled Nebraska that night and, you know, 7 and, you know, fell apart. This game, obviously, we know where this program's at. It's in a different stage with Scott Frost, and he said it best going in. They had a puncher's chance if they played their capability. Well, you get a holding penalty on the opening kickoff. You're automatically inside the 10-yard line. You throw a pick on your first possession. And at that point, I mean, they were just in the hole the rest of the night. And then they get their one good drive down 14-0. They throw a pick again. I mean, it was, what, 7 possessions in the first half, 3 interceptions, and 4 3-and-outs. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it. That's the whole show. Sean wrapped it up for us. we want to make sure that everybody reaches out to us with questions that you have. We don't have phones, but we do have, of course, as always, you can text or email us at bigred@netnebraska.org. Social media-wise, tweet at us, send us questions on Facebook. We're going to keep our eyes on all of it. And here's this week's sideline survey. Nebraska's schedule gets more manageable over the next 4 games. They got 2 games, a bye, then 2 games. What will Nebraska's record be over those next 4 games? Will they go 4-0, 3-1, 2-2, or 1-3? Or will they drop all 4? Head to our website and cast your vote right now. You can see right now 50% saying 3-1 over these next 4. I would say the toughest of those games is probably at Minnesota. Would you agree with that being the toughest one?
Do we know enough about Minnesota? They've struggled to run the ball, too, for, on paper, what looked like the deepest backfield in the Big Ten with 4 backs capable of maybe being 1,000-yard backs, and some already had been 1,000-yard backs. They have not lived up to that capability, but their quarterback play has been a surprise.
And they're 4-0, and they've beaten everybody they've played, and Purdue, even with the injuries, you know, they came back. Minnesota held them off.
They won at Fresno. That was a good win.
We got to give them credit for where they are, and it's on the road, so...
Yeah, I think that'd be mine in this series. I think it's, you know, I don't ever like to look ahead, but I think Northwestern's gonna be really tough this next week too. But by far, Minnesota going there, it's always tough.
Yeah, at night too.
Yeah, it is. It just seems like those fans get juiced up.
Here's the schedule up right now. As we're talking about, so Northwestern's at 3:00. Then we get another night game, 6:30 against Minnesota. We'll find out exactly which station that's going to be on. Indiana, when they have Michael Penix Jr. in the lineup, that's a scary team. They push Michigan State to the brink. That's going to be a tough one with a running quarterback. And then Purdue, Purdue is so beaten up right now.
They are. And young, very, very young.
Yeah, heard an injury report on Sindelar yet?
I think Sindelar is going to play, but I know Rondo Moore's out.
For the year.
Well, no, for at least for the next game. Against the game against Penn State, he's definitely out. Yeah, for sure.
That's a huge blow.
it is a huge blow for them. And if he misses more than one game, you know, obviously every time he's off the field, you're losing a guy who had 10 catches a game is what he averaged last year.
I think looking at the schedule, I think just where Nebraska's at in their program right now in this season and where our struggles are, I think every game is just going to unfortunately be a grind. You know, I just don't think there's going to be a comfortable, you know, you're on the fourth quarter and you're up by two or three scores. I think it's going to be tough and it's going to be hard fought just with O-line struggles. Martinez just doesn't seem to be right there yet. You know, linebacker issues on the defense. I think it's going to be tight. This is the way it is.
We've talked a lot about the game already, Sean. You gave us a really good breakdown of some of the things that happened just in the first quarter. Let's go back to Friday and the facilities announcement. You talk to these athletes all the time after they come and visit now. They already impressed, I know. What do you think this is going to mean for recruiting?
Well, I think it's really amazing. I don't think people realize how much the rest of the conference had passed Nebraska in facilities. And once you started to put the numbers and the facts and the figures out there, and we did a pretty good job on Husker Online over the last 6-7 months of really laying out the facilities that other Big Ten schools had built up. And it's eye-opening that Nebraska's facility had fallen so far behind, but it wasn't as functional for what they need. I think this new one, you know, they're not going to mess around. I mean, this is going to be a facility that's going to be built for the long haul, one that if they do upgrades to it, it'll be very easy to do upgrades. I think that was the problem with their current building, that they could not upgrade it to meet the needs, to meet the entire roster size as far as meeting space, locker room space, et cetera, where the weight room even is, you know, pretty small, honestly, for a roster of 150-some players right now. So this is going to be huge for Nebraska. You know, it's going to be the best in the country when it's done.
What do you think about it, Jay? We're watching the animation now. What do you think about the look?
It makes me feel old because because in 2006 was the first year that
right.
an expansion of. That was my senior year. So all of a sudden they're saying that's dated. I'm like, whoa, you know, yeah. Let's back up here a little bit. But no, it's an arms race. We all know this. It's you're competing with everyone. And if you're not up to par with everyone else, you got to get up there. So I love it. It's beautiful. I was, you know, hear about where are they going to put it? Where do they have real estate to put it? And I'm like, it makes sense now, right where the Edward track is. And I know the track, you know, is getting a new facility, so they'll help take care of those issues. But it's going to be awesome. I mean, you walk through there, and I mean, now you're thinking about, okay, are they gonna, where's the, you know, locker rooms? You know, how are they going to do the tunnel walk now and all these things and all the changes that can be happening? And it's awesome. I'm excited to see them and to see the plans and the renderings furthermore as a former player.
Bill Moos said about 25-30% already the money is there. How important is it for Nebraska to turn it around winning to make sure the rest of that 75% or 70%?
Whoever made the decision to have the presser Friday, good decision.
Right.
If you waited
for Monday, it would have been a good idea.
Yeah, it would have been a very good Monday press conference today. But I think once they show people more and more, and they haven't gotten to the public stage of the fundraising, a lot of it's all been privately done with guys like Matt Davison, and obviously the former president, Hank Bounds, is involved as a fundraiser on this project. So the fact that they've been able to get $35 to $40 million in hand already, that's a great sign. And you know, there's more projects they're going to do as well. I mean, they just haven't been able to announce those. But you know, once they hit the Regents things, there's a lot more they want to do with the track
and swimming,
golf, and swimming. North Stadium, South Stadium. I know they're going to put escalators in the north on the new building, and they have big plans for the south. They just weren't able to really unveil any of that on Friday.
On our Facebook page, Jared Larchick says it was great to see the I formation plays again, and they worked. They were fun. Yeah. I mean, they were so good that Ryan Day had to call a timeout.
Right. No, it was a great wrinkle. Love it. You get the option, you know, it's all those the fullback traps out of it. I mean, it was great.
Yep.
It's good stuff. Kind of shows, you know, we get some of those plays, you just defensively, you kind of can't quite disguise as much when you do some of those things. So it's fun. I'm interested to see if they're going to continue to do that, or is this kind of a one game type thing for Frost?
Yeah, he kind of mentioned it. You know, they've been practicing it. Obviously, they've been practicing it. It worked, but a veer scheme like that against teams that don't know it's coming, I mean, you could certainly make hay.
And I think it was an adjustment to help Dedrick Mills more than anything.
Yep.
He has never really been a shotgun running back in his career. He
had a zone back.
He had been a guy at Georgia Tech in that double wing as the fullback. And then obviously he lined up as a fullback and I back in the I formation. So I think it helps his running style. And this offensive line, I think they've had some mental issues too, where when you line up with simple smash mouth football, you're like, all right, just hit the guy in front of you and go.
Right.
And I think it helped that offensive line play some of their best football in that short span on Saturday night as well.
From what you saw on tape, obviously the offensive line struggled. Mm-hmm. How much is that a concern going forward? Or is that more about how good Ohio State is?
I think it's a little bit. I mean, Chase Young's going to be a top two pick yep. next year in the NFL draft. No, I mean, you're playing a center that's first time he's ever played this position. And that's a big thing. He is the middle linebacker. I mean, he's making the calls. He's the anchor of the offensive line. And so without him being in camp, you know, he didn't really do much for him with his foot injury. So guys are still getting used to playing with Juergens and getting the feel. And, you know, I know as a defensive end, when a new three technique or a defensive tackle would come next to me, I felt uncomfortable. Even though I had to worry about my own things, you just get a feel and a flow of the thing. And I think all the rest of the four guys are getting used to that with the O-line. And he's going to get better. He's gotten better at times, still struggling with some snap issues. But, yeah, they'll continue to get better. They're obviously, I'd almost say the weakest link, but they're definitely part of some of these struggles, that not only for this game, but for offensively for this year.
More questions from Facebook, and I know Scott Frost doesn't talk about injuries, but from what you understand, Sean, he asked for an injury update, Don Burris does, on Washington, and do we know anything more about Barrett Pickering?
Yeah, Washington, you know, he hurt his leg at Illinois, and obviously had the concussion, but the way it looked to me on Saturday, he took another shot right to that leg on a nice just leg dive tackle, and that leg has just bothered him. I asked Scott about that on Monday at the press conference, and they've got to figure out a plan on how to manage and utilize him because he is such a part of this offense, those 8 to 10 touches of quality that he gives this offense. Mm-hmm. They've got to get that back in there because without him, they're missing a huge element of the home run. And Barrett Pickering, no update. I mean, it is crickets on the Barrett Pickering front. I noticed Bo Wilson didn't practice today on the offensive line. So that's one guy to watch this week as well on that guard position and what they do there if there's something to watch at one of the offensive line spots.
He took quite the shot in the Ohio State game. What about the defensive line and how they played? If there's a positive with a team who scored 48 points, D-line played pretty well.
They played really well. And this has been the strength. We've talked about this, you know, for other shows. By far one of the better D-lines Nebraska's had in the last couple of years. And they're continuing to play very, very well. If the linebackers can get a little better behind them and start making some plays and start recognizing and diagnose some things better, I think this defense will continue to get better. But kind of surprising to me, when you have that good of D-line, sometimes your linebackers struggle to disguise and make some plays because usually they're
diagnosed better, right?
Absolutely, yeah. But when you have good D-line play, you know, it's not like they're letting guys just run up to them in the second level and they can't get off blocks or see things. They got to play with better eyes and just trust what they're seeing a little bit better. But the D-line's been great. Outside linebackers have been pretty good. I know I'm going to break down a play a little later here about, you know, poor outside linebacker, defensive line kind of play here. But overall, they gave us a little bit of a chance defensively in that game.
We took some questions before the show started, and one of them was about Noah Vedral. And we got a couple of questions on here. One from Curtis that says, can we get Vedral starting soon? Adrian isn't the answer. He telegraphs his reads and turns the ball over too much.
Yeah, I just don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I think obviously the coaches see every snap in practice. They're going to know the best over anybody. But
right.
We know what Adrian can be, and we've seen it. But obviously other things around him have to be there, whether it's the protection, the snap. The perimeter play at the receiver position has been a huge issue. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a guy, Michael, that can win the 50-50 ball right now, where a year ago you could just toss it up to Stanley Morgan, and he was going to win that battle. And right now, Ken Owiyanoa is not winning those battles, as we know. Mike Williams is not winning those battles. J.D. Spielman is not a perimeter receiver. Wandell Robinson is not a perimeter guy. So they don't have much on the edge. Their blocking hasn't been as good on the outside either. So it's more – I mean, it's easy to say it's all Martinez, but there's so much more than Martinez that's not working with his offense.
And Scott Frost had a soundbite, and he said, we've got to block better up front. I got to get snaps better to him. Wide receivers need to run better routes. I think he was kind of identifying, without calling people out, here are some of the problems he's dealing with. Where are the young wide receivers? You name the guys who have a little bit of experience. Where's Jerron Woodyard, who's obviously a veteran? Where are the young wide receivers or recruits in his class? Darian Chase and Jamie Nance. Where are those guys?
Well, Cade Warner has been on the field. He got on the field last week the first time, so that's a guy to watch. But Jerron Woodyard is a mystery because he has not played in a game yet this year.
Right.
And, you know, he had a decent spring. Andre Hunt, as we know, is suspended. I think he'd be a factor right now if he was out there. So that was a bigger blow maybe than we realized back in August when he was suspended indefinitely from the team. But Darian Chase, of the young three freshmen, is the one that they've played the most. He's the only one on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. Damarian Houston, Jamie Nance, we just haven't heard their names. I mean, they're not guys that they feel ready at this very moment, even even though they're two of the faster guys on this roster. But I look like next year, if Xavier Betts can qualify academically, I mean, I watched him at Lincoln Pius this past Friday night. I mean, he could get on the field as a bigger perimeter guy immediately for Nebraska. They just don't have a guy like Betts right now that can win those battles on the edge.
As long as he plays fast, because that's the key, Troy Walters. Well, one of the big issues, you mentioned it when we were doing the questions, it's turn the ball over, right? Yep. That's what put Nebraska behind the eight ball on Saturday. And if you look at this graphic we have up, 14 total turnovers. That's the second most nationally. 9 lost fumbles, most nationally. Adrian Martinez is leading the country in fumbles, not lost, but just fumbles overall, and also the 5 interceptions. Mm-hmm. It puts the defense in a bad spot.
Absolutely. In a game like you go against Illinois, where you get them kind of deep in your territory, you know, defense in those situations, trying to hold their opponents to 3 points, that's a win. Unfortunately, when you turn the ball over against a team like Ohio State and Fields and you know, will be a finalist for the Heisman, in my opinion, you just can't do it. You just can't do it. The game of college football is so momentum-based when – especially on a play like we're seeing right now in the highlights where you're going and it's just you get that, make that game 14-7, momentum's back to you guys, defense come on the field, you get one another stop, also the, you get the ball back to make it 14-14, but you can't have it. I know we've discussed and talked about in this system, you know, they tend to, in the up-tempo, speed, turnovers, penalties, mm-hmm. always tend to be an issue, but when you're playing and a much, much better opponent. You have to limit those as much as possible. But unfortunately, you have 7 of them in the last 2 games, and they got to get over that real quick.
I want to apologize because now we're going to show the highlights.
So not suitable for young children.
They're making us do this. I didn't want to do it. The day was a beautiful day. After the rain, everything cleared off, but then the kickoff happened. This is the first interception, and you see both of the offensive tackles were beaten. The ball's got to be more to the sideline. Jeffrey Okuna, though, is going to be a top 15 pick in the NFL. These guys are all over the field for Ohio State. Now, here's one of the first throws for Justin Fields, who had a big day. He had 8 different receivers in the game. And then here's Fields showing off his speed, made the decision quickly, beats Mo Berry to the end zone, and gets in for the score to make it 7-0 Ohio State. Of course, J.K. Dobbins, one of the top 4 or 5 backs coming out in this draft, coming up as well. You see what he does as he runs over Taylor Britt. He had a big day as well. And then this is the big play. You're going to diagram in this one. That's 3rd and 10. You get a stop there. Maybe you force a field goal.
Yeah, absolutely. They get caught in a stunt. They run a little QB sweep to the boundary. And, yeah, it was a really good call. But poor play call and performance there by the defense.
And then that was a rub route to Hill for the touchdown there to make it 14-0. Nebraska goes I formation. Fullback trap you see there. Then they run a quarterback follow play. Hey, we ran this in high school. This is straight veer. You just follow your fullback up into the hole. You get a first down for Adrian Martinez. Ohio State takes the timeout. They come back. Nebraska decides to run some play action. Got a wide open receiver, but the offensive tackle gets pushed back into his back. Makes a high throw. Ball gets tipped. Just bad luck with Okuna laying on the ground after slipping and makes the interception there. Again, that's one of the top players coming up in the draft. It was a field goal made by Ohio State that makes it 17-0. Adrian Martinez comes back. I'm not sure what happened on that throw. Only the coaches, the wide receiver, Adrian Martinez, know what happened on that one. That's the 3rd interception right there in the first, 16 minutes of the game. And then you get Justin Fields, again, showing his speed, showing his talent. Had a huge day, as we know. Ran for 72 yards and a touchdown. And then here's the backup, Master Teague III, breaking a tackle and taking it in the end zone and getting that touchdown to make it 24-0. And then Teague has a chance to show off how good of a receiver he is as well. This is a play they run a lot. It's a throwback to the running back. This is a Washington Redskins play from the 1980s and Joe Gibbs. They ran it here. You see Master Teague getting down the field and making a big play. And then you have Master Teague again with another run, showing his elusiveness. Again, this is their backup down to the 1 yard line. And then they give it back to Master Teague again, and he gets in from 1 yard out. That makes it 31-0. And then they bring back in the starter, J.K. Dobbins, in this game. Rush, first we're going to see sad Nebraska fans. Yeah, I know the feeling for that. And then you bring Dobbins back in the game. He averaged 7.4 yards a carry in this game on the night, making plays all over the field. And then we bring back to Justin Fields, makes a perfect pass into the end zone right over DiCaprio Boodle. Great defense right there, but a better pass and a better catch. Makes it 38-0 at halftime. Three of the last four games, Ohio State's led Nebraska 31-3, 35-0, and 38-0 at the half to show the difference in the best team in the division and where Nebraska is right now. And there's the last scoring drive now for Ohio State in the third quarter. J.K. Dobbins gets a long run for 26 yards. And then after that, you have Justin Fields, a 6-yard touchdown pass, another perfect pass into the corner of the end zone. Can't get any better than that for the touchdown. Of course, that makes it 48-0. But Nebraska would come back and get a score. It would have been the first time Nebraska was shut out at home since 1968 versus Kansas State. But Adrian Martinez makes this long run. He had 15 carries for 81 yards on the night. And then that sets up this touchdown run by Dedrick Mills to get Nebraska on the board 48-7 to avoid the shutout. As you would expect, it was not very pretty in terms of the stats. Ohio State, 368 yards rushing, 580 total yards overall, and you see the turnovers from Nebraska. All right, time to go into playbook now. Jay Moore is live in the huddle.
All right, I only got one play to break down tonight. It wasn't a ton of good highlights to break down, honestly, from this game. But when I was watching the game Saturday night, this is the first play that stuck out of my mind. I really want to break down. So we already saw it in the highlights from Michael earlier. But formation into the field. They got a little bunch set up here. They're going to catch Nebraska here in a little blitz. And it's just, I don't know if the call was right or what, but it ended up being the perfect call for this situation. As I roll here, I'm going to highlight. We got Lamar Jackson, Dismuke, Alex Davis. They're going a little ET or a TE stunt here. They're going to catch them. Now, I talk all the time about good defense is setting the edge, having an edge to funnel everything back. Well, as you can see here, there is zero edge. So obviously, Fields could, you know, almost could have scored, but luckily, Will Honus in this situation has at least recognized what's going on here. So you got two guys sit inside. You have Dismuke's guy cracking down to seal the edge. He needs to kind of come up here and fit somehow, some way, because obviously he needs to recognize this is a run. Doesn't. You have Lamar Jackson here in man-to-man coverage. Will Honus tries to make something come over top, make it happen, but a little too late. And that's one of the plays where, you know, Nebraska's defense got to learn and get better.
Jay, this is a schemed thing where they saw what Nebraska was in, right, and realized they were in man-to-man and knew if they run this and block it well, it was going to be an easy first down.
Yeah, it's like almost like tape. They must have saw something. It was 3rd and 10. You must have, you know, like a tendency Nebraska has. They like to run a little of that game down in, when they're into the boundary, and then they just caught him as a perfect call. I mean, it's – you know, if they
sometimes
was a pass play,
wins.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the perfect call. Unfortunately, you'd like to see him, you know, not run that TE stunt there and set the edge and get him down for a couple yard game.
Let's take a look at our game day photo winner now. Christina emailed in the photo of her family. They were at College Game Day on Saturday morning. That's a really good looking crew there. Hopefully, their signs made Herb Street fix his nose. That's very funny. Christina wins the new Big Red Wrap Up T-shirt, a coffee tumbler, as well as the 2019 Hail Varsity yearbook. Send us your best game day photo each Saturday for your chance to win these great prizes. Up next on the show, we'll be joined by York, Nebraska's own and the Dean of Reporters for Nebraska. Mike Babcock will join us from Hail Varsity. Before we go to break, though, we'll leave you with some more great images from Saturday, courtesy of Hail Varsity. Stay with us. We're back soon.
We had a great practice this morning. The guys are excited. Everything they want to accomplish is still right in front of them. I told my guys to put that one behind us fast. We need to be focused on this week and concentrate on practicing as well as we can to get ready for this game.
This season, no matter whether it was a win, coming off a loss, we've been doing a good job of just, you know, focusing on the task at hand. You know, trying to correct the things that were wrong the week before in order to, you know, get it right this week. So we're not really focusing on anything in the past so much as we're focusing on what we're doing, you know, this coming Saturday.
Oh, everybody, you know, they're trying to flip the switch, you know. We can't come off a loss and then come to practice, you know, sluggish. We have to, you know, up it back up because we're on to a new week. Now we got Northwestern.
you know, Northwestern's a team that I think everybody always respects in this league because they're never going to beat themselves. They're a disciplined team. You have to be sound in what you do. You have to be sound in your coverage because they'll make you pay. They're smart enough to adjust to what everybody's doing. But I think it's a really good football team that doesn't beat themselves a lot.
Seen all the close games that have happened between Northwestern and Nebraska, including last year, Hail Marys and overtime games. And, you know, they're just such a well-coached team year in and year out. They're disciplined. They're smart. They're not going to beat themselves. And those type of teams end up in a lot of close games. So if we're in one, we need our guys to respond well. It's always critical to win, but we got to keep improving. This game is the most important. Once we finish this one, the next one will be most important. This is the time of year where you start to get a little tired and beat up, and every team in the country is that way. We're no exception. But we need to practice this week like it's our first game, last game, most important game.
Welcome back to NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. We're live at the Holtus Convention Center in York. We want to thank all the folks that came out, including the people from Cornerstone Bank that are sitting in the front rows. We're joined by our special guest, Mike Babcock, a native of York. We appreciate you coming out for us.
Oh, thank you. I'm very proud of being from York.
You have seen a lot of games that Nebraska's played. The last three or four times they played Ohio State, they've trailed at halftime by a lot. This one of the best teams Nebraska plays every year, obviously, and for some reason they play them every year.
Yeah, you know, that's true, and I think that's one of the things that when Nebraska got in the Big Ten, you know, that was like the opportunity to play Ohio State, and I think people thought maybe Michigan on a regular basis, and that was an attraction to doing it, and I think it's good that they do. It just shows you where the program has to go yet in order to get where it wants to be, and I think that's, you know, the people look at it, you have to take into account, do they have the coach that they want? Yeah, they do. He has some stability on his staff. That's important. I think that's always important. He's had two recruiting classes. You've got to consider that. And then the other thing you have to consider is he's only five games into his second season here. To get Nebraska where it wants to be from where it was is not something that's going to be accomplished, I think, in 17 games. And it's difficult because the fans are passionate, and there's, you know, sometimes it's difficult to be patient. But, you know, I think it's – Tom Osborne had the same thing when he replaced Bob Devaney. You know, the complaint there was he can't beat Oklahoma. His teams can't beat Oklahoma. And when they finally did beat Oklahoma in 78, then they lose the next week to Missouri and lose a chance to play for a national championship. But it's not easy. And that's the thing that I think people, it's easy to forget. That's the easy part. It's easy to forget that it's difficult.
Mike, you've seen, again, a lot of backup quarterbacks be called for to be starters. We're seeing it again with Noah Vedrill because of the struggles Adrian Martinez has. Thoughts on what you've seen from Adrian and the idea of bringing Noah in?
You know, for Adrian, to me, it's kind of like in baseball. You know, a rookie comes in and he hits 35 home runs and he bats 300 or whatever. And then those pitchers, they see what he hits. They adjust to what he does. And maybe that second year he doesn't do as well unless he makes an adjustment. And I think some of that is that teams now have video to study on Adrian Martinez an entire season. And it becomes a question of how does he adjust? Because we know he has the athleticism. We know he has the talent to do it. It's a question of adjustment. And you were talking earlier, I think Sean said, you know, it's not just him. It's the guys up front. Mm-hmm. You know, are they getting the job done? It's the guy, the receivers. Are they doing what they need to do? It's a cliche, and I think Scott Frost mentioned it, but it's the, you know, when things go well, the coach and the quarterback get the praise, right. And when things go poorly, that's where the complaint comes in. So, I've seen it before. You know, we saw it. Ironically, we saw it after the Central Florida game.
1996.
Yeah. When Scott Frost was replaced by Frankie London, as Coach Osborne said he would be in the second quarter, and Frankie London takes the team down for a touchdown. in Central Florida, and then Scott Frost comes back in, as Tom Osborne said in advance would be the case, and people start booing, you know, because Frankie Lindon, look what he did. He took the team right down the field. So it's easy to that's an easy out. You know, things are going bad. It's the quarterback's fault. Things are going bad on offense. But it's much more complicated than that, much more. And we know, again, the athleticism, the talent that Adrian Martinez has. And as Sean mentioned, the coaches see the quarterbacks every day in practice. If Noah Vedral was doing a better job in practice, I have no idea. No, there's no doubt that he'd be the guy out there. But they see Adrian and they put him out there.
Mike, I'm curious, every offseason in August and July, there's always optimism. Have you ever been around a summer where there's not optimism for the season? It feels like every August, this is the year. And when you look at this team and kind of where it's at, do you think we all maybe overestimated that it would just happen because Scott Frost is here and year two factor and et cetera? But I guess the first part, I mean, have you ever been around an offseason where there's not optimism in Nebraska?
No, I don't think I've really been around a season where there wasn't optimism. And, you know, it's magnified by social media. It's a whole different context now. And I think it's magnified by Scott Frost's success at Central Florida. Again, I'm just repeating what people have said, but that's the thing. You know, he had a remarkable season, his second season at Central Florida. Central Florida is not Nebraska. The Big Ten is not the American Athletic Conference. It's a whole different dynamic. And to think that, okay, Scott Frost did it at Central Florida. You know, this is his second season. You know, let's go back to winning championships now because we had that 4-8 season. That's what I thought the optimism in August was. It's incredible that a 4-8 team would be in the top 25 going into the season. You know, this is the best 4-8 team in the history of college football.
Pick to win the division.
Yeah, if you turn things around that way. And again, it's the passion that people have, I think, for the program. And I go back to the original statement, Scott Frost is the guy that they want in charge. He's the guy. He's the right guy for the job. I think there's no question about that.
Mike, what were your expectations for this year? I mean, we always had, but with your expectations, what has caught you by surprise? What have you seen that's kind of been underwhelming, you know, overwhelming for this football team so far?
Well, I think all the talk convinced me that Nebraska would probably be 4-0 when it played Ohio State. I tend to be pessimistic. My wife says I overdo the pessimism sometimes. And so I was kind of encouraged to have an 8-4 season. But I think in the back of my mind, realistically, I thought 7-5, if you're coming off a 4-8 season, and again, was that a 4-8 team? Probably, look at the talent. Probably there were opportunities where it shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains, it was 4-8. So going into this season, if it's 7-5 and you're playing a bowl game, that's a pretty good turnaround. Mm-hmm. Again, given the context in the Big Ten, different situation, different dynamic. So, you know, my expectations were a winning record and get to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a step ahead. And I think it's still there for this team. Mm-hmm. And you know, we'll see in the next couple of weeks because they're, you know, Northwestern, that's always a, you never know what's going to happen with Northwestern, regardless of how good it had seemed to that point. Minnesota, then an off week. We'll see.
As bad as it was for Ohio State, we have some stats to show you that we started putting together last week. It does show you that Nebraska has improved in several areas. I mean, obviously turnovers isn't one of them, but we have improved in some of the areas, especially when it comes to yards per play and when Nebraska's done points per play as well. And that's something that you can look forward to. If you look at 2018, that points per play, 0.38 to 0.45, you're talking about if you have 72 plays a game, that's a 7-point difference. That means a lot. And if you look at what Nebraska's done in yards per play, opponent's yards per play, they have improved in each of those stats. Even though it necessarily didn't show up on Saturday, that's the best team they're going to play all year. Right, Mike? I can't think there's somebody else.
And
unless they meet Alabama somehow in a bowl game.
With all the turnovers, they're still doing that.
Right.
You know, so I think that says something about the potential for this team. And again, I don't know that you're going to see it every week. And, I was surprised to be honest with you, when the rankings came out and Ohio State wasn't at least number two.
Yeah.
Because I watched some of that Clemson-North Carolina game, and Clemson has not played all that well to this point. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, Ohio State's going to be number two. Anybody that saw that thing, you give respect to that. That's a good Ohio State team. But number three, yeah. Still, that's pretty good.
My coworker John Bishop put together a graphic of Trevor Lawrence and Adrian Martinez and went all the stats, and they're almost exactly the same. Do you believe in a sophomore slump? Because they're both sophomores coming off of very good freshman years.
Well, you know, I go back to what I said earlier. I think it's kind of like you got to be able to adjust, because now teams have all this video of you. They know how to. They know what you do, and you have to adjust. They adjust. You adjust. You can do it. I think Trevor Lawrence will do it. I think Adrian Martinez will do it. I think it's just a question of time. And again, throw in everybody around him. You know, that's another factor. I think Nebraska's offensive line has a ways to go yet before it's where it should be, where we expect it to be.
In terms of winning in the trenches, obviously we've seen that's been an issue. Sean, one of the questions on Twitter was, could you see them bringing in some junior college offensive linemen for next year?
I don't know if that's the right way to go. They don't want this to be just a quick fix. They want to do it the right way, because we've seen multiple coaches come into Nebraska and try to do it the quick fix way.
And have good second years, too.
And it works out for a short term, but then it falls back off. And you look at the freshman class right now, there's six scholarship true freshman offensive linemen. I think particularly two have already emerged, Bryce Benhart and Ethan Piper. And it wouldn't surprise me by next year at this time, we're seeing those guys maybe in a starting role, maybe fighting for a starting job. Maybe Matt Farniak can move to a guard position if Benhart's ready, but I don't think they're ready now.
Isn't Piper playing center?
Guard and center.
Guard and center, okay.
He can play both positions. So it will be interesting to see, because they fit more what Scott wants, longer athletic guys, but they need that time to grow and develop. And you look at that, they added five guys, Michael, between 6'7 and 6'9 that are freshmen.
Yeah.
They just need some time to go through the offseason program.
Yeah, that's not even Fred Hoiberg's group. That's just the football part. Mike, when you look at the history of this program and the building aspect of it, can Nebraska get back to what they were even in the 80s? Obviously, that six-year run in the 90s is unprecedented, but even get back to where they were in the 80s?
Yeah, you're not going to have a run like they did, like Tom Osborne had in his final four seasons. But, I think they can. I think they can. Again, with the right coach, which I think they have, and with a little time to do it, again, getting recruiting classes, developing the system the way he wants it done. You know, it's only the second year in the system for these guys that have come back as well. There's a learning curve there that's involved in that. And I think they're still learning. But, yeah, I think Nebraska can get back to the 80s. I think it can be back. It can earn its way back into the national discussion. You know, I'm not saying it's a national championship contender every year.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the 80s under Osborne, just about every season there, you could pick out one or two games. If they would have gone the other way, Nebraska was in a position to play for a national championship. Mm-hmm. That's pretty remarkable. But the situation was different. You're in the Big Eight. Now you've got to not only win your division, you got to win the conference, and then there's a playoff. Back then, you're in the Big Eight. Who do you have to beat? You got to beat Oklahoma. You can focus on that because you're gonna probably beat the rest of the teams. Mm-hmm. And then if you can beat Oklahoma, and with the respect that you have, and with national championships determined by vote, you have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Well, it's different now.
Yeah,
it's dramatically different. And so I don't think it can never be the way it was in that sense, because college football is so much different.
Yeah. You got another book in you? Scott could turn this around. Another Mike Babcock book about Scott turning around.
There you go. We can. I like to stick with the history, the real ancient history, because there's nobody around to remember whether I'm right or wrong.
Do some research. Yeah. Mike Babcock, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up next on the wrap-up, Sean's going to break down a very busy recruiting weekend. As we go to break, more sights and sounds from Saturday, courtesy of Hail Varsity.
Welcome back. We are still live at the Holfest Convention Center in York. I'm Michael Sevier. He's Sean Callahan. Big weekend, and out of the weekend, right before the game, we get a commit.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprise. Teddy Prohaska out of Elkhorn South, a 2021, the top prospect in the state of Nebraska, has already got a Michigan offer among many others. Made the decision middle of the week, you know what, I'm going to commit to Nebraska. I've got a flight already booked to go to Notre Dame. I was going to visit LSU, but this is where I want to be, and I just want to get it over with. And this goes against what Teddy had been planning all along. He wanted to wait for this whole year to kind of get over with and then make a decision probably in the summer. So this is a big score. It's the third consecutive year now that Nebraska has landed a big-time tackle. Turner Corcoran this year, and then the year before, obviously, Bryce Benhart. So you've got 6'9", 6'9", and 6'7", coming in, all four-star, all top 100 type guys. Yeah. They are well on their way at offensive tackle if they can get this group here on campus and developed.
And Teddy's still a baby. I mean, he's still growing. This is a kid who still looks young in the face, big old legs. He could put on another 50 pounds.
Oh, yeah. He's 6'9", 280s. Yeah. And he looks skinny still.
Yep.
I mean, he's gonna easily play 320s. And he's an athlete. He plays baseball. He's played basketball. He's not just a football guy. And he's mean. I mean, a lot of times a big guy like that doesn't play with a lot of attitude. Mm-hmm. Teddy has that attitude and that grind. Both his parents were high-level athletes. Dad played football, you know. Mom was a swimmer at Kansas. Mm-hmm. So he's just got a natural gift and the size to go with it.
What about the weekend overall? We had a lot of questions on Facebook and Twitter, worried that the bad game hurt the weekend of recruiting.
Yeah, 11 official visitors came in overall, so it's about as many as Nebraska wants to host. Mm-hmm. Several high-value defensive targets were here. Jackson Bratton, Alabama commit, was here. That was kind of one of the surprise ones. But I think they are going to get a couple of commits to come out of this weekend when it's all said and done. You know, Caden Johnson's one that really intrigues me.
Yeah. Isn't Rodney Gross going to make a decision?
I think Rodney Gross, Nebraska's in really good shape with him. Caden Johnson out of Minnesota, number one player in the state of Minnesota. To me, that's one of their top five players right now on the recruiting board. I think you're going to see two or three of these 11. Some of those guys are already committed, but you're going to see two to three of these guys probably end up Huskers when it's all said and done.
Nebraska's already got two running backs committed in this class. One, Sevion Morrison, is the bigger guy, almost 6 foot tall, almost 200 pounds.
But he can run.
Yeah.
You look at the versatility of Sevion Morrison and what he does out of Oklahoma, and you know he is – got a chance, Michael, to be one of the all-time leading rushers in the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
He's going to rush for over 3,000 yards this year.
He passed Spencer Tillman's record up.
You watch him here, the explosion, the versatility. Ryan Hell does a dynamite job of recruiting running backs. I mean, you look at what kind of talent he's brought on campus.
Right.
You could argue, the Callahan era, they had a nice run there of NFL-level guys, Brandon Jackson, Roy Helu, Marlon Lucky. The Pliny era had Abdullah. They had Roy Helu.
Rex Burkhead.
You get the sense Hell is building that type of group as well, but they're more versatile guys that can do other things that fit this offense, kind of like what you see with Wandell Robinson right now.
Let's talk in-state recruit now, Wyatt Seeger. And I had a chance to watch a little bit of his video out of Oakland, Craig. This is a long, athletic-looking tight end.
And this was one of the more under-the-radar guys in the state of Nebraska. 6'7", 230, committed to South Dakota State. He's visited Nebraska, though, for almost every home game. He's still come in as an unofficial visitor. So Nebraska is still recruiting him as a high-priority walk-on target. But he showed up to this camp here in St. Louis to the Combine. Wasn't invited. Out of like 600, 700 kids, he earned an invite into the camp, and his name just exploded. He received multiple offers after this camp ended, and all the people were like, man, that big dude's Gronk.
Yeah.
And they were calling him Rob Gronkowski out there in St. Louis that day, as no one knew who he was. He's from a Class C2 school, Oakland Craig, but Joe Anderson and those guys have always been a really good program there and done a great job, and Wyatt Seagren's as good of a prospect that they've maybe ever had out there.
Nebraska still has a chance, though.
They do I would say more as a walk-on. Mm-hmm. They just got a tight end walk-on out of Aurora, Borricker. So, they've already gotten one. But these are the perfect kind of walk-ons. You know, the big, long, rangy guys that you can bring in that are FCS type of guys that you convince to stay home.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, man.
I think I've shown the coaches that I'm a hard worker and think I have their trust when it comes to knowing the playbook. And I feel like I've kind of stepped up as a leader to help the younger guys. And Coach Frost, his saying is to desire to excel and have no fear of failure. And I've really taken that to heart. I've learned to just enjoy the little things and really just be proud of who I am now and how far I've come, and be proud of representing the state. May not know about me. Let's see. I'm currently engaged, so maybe people don't know about that. Been with my fiance for 8 years, over 8 years, so it's been a long time. So I guess when I'm committed to something, I fully commit myself to it. Honestly, it's an honor just to go from a kid always watching Nebraska football growing up and dreaming of being here. And honestly, that's what pushes me even more to give in my all, because I know how rare it is to be able to be in these shoes and to be a part of this program. And honestly, I just hope to represent this state to the best of my ability.
Be sure to vote on this week's Sideline Survey. What will Nebraska's record be over the next four games? We'll look at some of the current percentage. 47% of the folks say 3-1, which probably would mean losing to Minnesota at Minnesota. 4-0 for the positive folks. 2-2 for 20%. 1-3, 2%. And one person out there who's not very happy today, going 0-4, the 1%. Can you talk a little bit, Jay, about what Wyatt was saying about the pride of being an in-state kid? Mm-hmm. Looking at that stadium growing up and then being able to play in there?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I loved it. It was my childhood dream growing up too, you know, playing and putting that down, you know, pouring that helmet on it. And growing up, you know, being able to name almost every player from the program and knowing all the numbers and being a part. I mean, you know, I was sixth, seventh grade when we won all those national championships. That's just prime. Yeah. That's when you're just engaged in everything, you know. You just, and then you grow up, you start getting involved more in sports, and you get the opportunity. And it was, you know, one of the greatest opportunities I've ever had in my life. And to live that out, I would go back and do it all over again, 100%. Go those 4.5 years and go back there to Lincoln and put through all that work and all, you know, all that grind. It was awesome. Loved it. And I want, you know, more kids from the state want to, you know, they deserve to have the opportunity. You know, hopefully it'll be that way.
Let's look ahead to Saturday. We mentioned Northwestern's really struggled offensively. Hunter Johnson, who was one of the top, I believe, pro prospect quarterback that year when he came out. Obviously, Clemson thought he was pretty good. He's struggling. How much do you think that is actually the Northwestern offense and not as much him? Because they've struggled for years.
Yeah, the system of Northwestern, they haven't put up big numbers. I mean, Clay Thorson, I thought, came on by the end of his career. But even Clay Thorson at the very, very start, his numbers were not staggering, and he was, what, a four-year starter at Northwestern? Mm-hmm. So it is interesting because Pat Fitzgerald is feeling the heat as far as making a coordinator change on offense, but they've been able to obviously play great defense, great special teams, just grind out games, and he's been very loyal to his staff. But this is one of the first years you're starting to hear a lot of cries that, you know what, you need to maybe change it up. But I think they always have to be a spread team. I don't think that they're built to be anything else but what they run right now in offense.
Jay, you know, we talk a lot about the development at Iowa and Wisconsin. You got to give the same thing to Northwestern. They bring in kids, first have to academically qualify.
Absolutely.
And they put some really good players, especially in that front seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, gosh, I playing for the Packers. I mean, was,
sure.
I mean, the defensive. Yeah,
Patty,
I always forget his name, but I remember he killed us the last 2 years ago.
Yep.
When the last time we were at home, we came out with all black uniforms. He just killed us that game.
First name was Dean.
Yeah, so we'll figure it out eventually. It'll come to my mind. But no, they do. And it's not.
Dean Lowry.
There you go. There you go. I knew where I was going to get it. Yeah, because it's just hard. You just can't. It's obviously a lot different than SEC getting into a Northwestern school.
Sure.
But you gotta have time because you're not going to get five-star recruits coming in there. If you do, you know, it's good for them, but you have to give them time, 2-3 years. I mean, that's why you said it with, you know, other quarterbacks, they peak their third, fourth year in the program. And other schools do that as well. You know, Nebraska did it for many, many years, and hopefully we get back to doing that. But Fitzgerald has got it. He's got it ran. That program's been ran very, very efficiently, you know, for however long he's been there, and he's doing a hell of a job.
What about recruiting this week?
As far as the home game, I mean, Nebraska's looking at a couple more visitors coming in. But obviously last week was the big week, but still 3 o'clock game. So they will get a few more guys in town this weekend. And then obviously a bye week after Minnesota will be really, really big. And you have to have so much of your recruiting done with now, you know, because the December signing day. I mean, last year, Nebraska only signed one guy after the December signing day. So it is so expedited. We're all used to February here in Nebraska. But, you know, it's going to be December, really, that 95% of your class gets signed. And then there's going to be one guy maybe that you take later, and then you save the rest of your spots for the transfer portal. And that's become another element of recruiting.
Five games, Jay, and then you get two more, and then bye. How much do you think these guys are looking forward to that bye for some self-scout, get a little bit of rest?
Yeah, it's interesting. We haven't had – well, you get two byes this year.
Yep.
It's just strange. I mean, I think last thing I had two byes was probably, I think, my junior year of college back in it's been a while. To me personally, I don't know. I hated byes because I got rusty. You know, your eyes get, you know, you're just out of it a little bit. Your eyes, you know, just get a little sluggish from, I always say that you got to play with good eyes and you just get a little rusty, but no, it'd be good. Heal some guys up.
The self-scout is good, right? To have a chance to look at what your guys are right and wrong.
You can still get some good on good and to keep sharp and keep that rust off. But, you know, it's just these two games now, and take care of Northwestern, get a win at Minnesota, regroup, and go on from there, because then you got Indiana at Purdue, and you get Wisconsin. So a lot of football yet to be played, but these byes will definitely help us out.
What was your answer to the sideline survey? Record over the next four games?
I mean, I think 3-1 is very realistic. I still wouldn't be surprised if they go 4-0. I think this Saturday will kind of tell us that way. I don't think Minnesota, you know, of all the undefeated Power 5 teams, they might be one of the worst, if not the worst right now, the way they've squeaked out every single one of these games. So I think Scott Frost proved that he had a really good game plan against Minnesota a year ago. Mm-hmm. Adrian Martinez had a good game against Minnesota. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they went 4-0. I really wouldn't be surprised.
Adrian Martinez is 68%. 302 yards a game, 2.7 touchdowns a game versus the West through seven games. He has dominated the Western side of the division so far. If that continues, you're talking about a pretty good finish.
Right, and these are two West games in a row coming up for Nebraska, and if they can get these two, they'll be 3-0 in the West with Wisconsin and Iowa coming to Lincoln. So they're not out of this thing yet, as far as the division goes. They're very much in this thing, and Iowa has to play Ohio State still. Wisconsin has to play Ohio State still. Mm-hmm. So everyone in the top of the West has to go through the Buckeyes. So more than likely, that's going to be a loss for all three of those teams, and it's not going to hurt Nebraska in the grand scheme of the division.
Yeah, we've seen teams get blown out before. Ohio State got blown out last year by Purdue. Of course, bounced back. Did the same thing against Virginia Tech, so it's happened before. They still got a chance. But the big thing is just getting this win, right? Beat Northwestern.
And win them they beat them in Memorial Stadium one time, and it was Westerkamp's Hail Mary.
Right. Time to do that. Don't forget to head to our website for the prediction. Jay, Sean, and I will tell you exactly what will happen this week against the Northwestern Wildcats. Of course, Nebraska looks to get over that Ohio State defeat. Kickoff is scheduled for 3 p.m. on Fox. Next week, we're back in studio. We will miss all of you folks when we're back in studio to recap the Northwestern game. Brian Christopherson from 24/7 Sports will be our guest. We want to thank Mike Babcock, of course, for coming out. We appreciate him. Also, the folks here at the Holtis Convention Center in York, thank you to them, and Cornerstone Bank as well. For Jay Moore, Sean Callahan, I'm Michael Sevier. See you next week on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up.